Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sarah Kellogg, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Irvin, in this case. I would like to reserve a few minutes of my time for rebuttal. The issue in this case essentially boils down to the fact that it was the state's burden to show that the seizure of Mr. Irvin and subsequent search of the car was justified by an exception to the warrant requirement under the Fourth Amendment. However, the state failed to meet its burden at the suppression hearing, and therefore the evidence in this case must be suppressed. The initial traffic stop here was valid. It was based on the car's failure to signal a turn. As the passenger in the car, Mr. Irvin was seized for the duration of that initial traffic stop. The problem, however, is that the seizure continued when Officer Monahan made Mr. Irvin get out of the car. That seizure, that continued seizure, extended beyond the initial purpose of the stop. And there was no valid justification for that continued seizure and the subsequent search of the car as a result.
No valid justification?
Right.
Wasn't it a fact that Officer Ryan found out that the driver of the car did not have registration for the car and was operating on restraint under the license, driver's license that he had?
That's correct, Your Honor. And so the initial justification for the traffic stop was the failure to signal a turn. And then Officer Ryan went up to the driver and got his driver's license and Mr. Irvin's driver's license, and then learned, after running those licenses, that the driver's license was suspended. And at that point, there's still a justification for the ongoing traffic stop at that point. Officer Ryan then went back up to the driver's side of the car and had the driver get out of the car, apparently patted him down and ticketed him, and at that point decided to impound the car. It's at that point when the justification for the traffic stop is over, when the driver is ticketed and the officer decides to impound the car and conduct an inventory search. And so Mr. Irvin was then taken out of the car pursuant to that decision to impound it. So that continued seizure, taking Mr. Irvin out of the car, that went beyond the scope of the initial investigatory stop and everything that had to be done during that traffic stop. And there's no justification for that continued seizure of Mr. Irvin.
How could Officer Monahan leave the defendant in the car once it was decided to have the car impounded?
Well, if the state had presented evidence below that this inventory search, decision to impound and conduct an inventory search, was based on standardized police procedures and conducted pursuant to those procedures, which it did not present any evidence of that whatsoever. Had it presented that evidence and there was a valid decision to impound and conduct an inventory search, then there would be a justification to get Mr. Irvin out of the car at that point. But here we don't have that in the record. So the state presented no evidence that at the suppression hearing that justifies that ongoing seizure of Mr. Irvin. And it's really here, the issue is really the state failed to meet its burden to show that there was a valid exception to the warrant requirement.
Well, in practicality, then, it seems that your argument, if you take it to its logical conclusion, is that Mr. Irvin could have stayed in the car while the car was being towed away, subject to the impoundment, and there would have been no reason to remove him from the car.
If there was a valid impoundment, I think they could have gotten Mr. Irvin out of the car. The problem here is that we don't have a valid impoundment and decision to inventory the car.
Valid impoundment.
The testimony from the suppression hearing presents no evidence whatsoever that the officer was acting pursuant to standardized police procedures. And so to be a justification as an exception to the warrant requirement, the state has to show that there is a valid exception to the warrant requirement to conduct a search and seizure.
We're talking about searches as compared to impoundment. Now, I understand that there was a subsequent search, but you said that there was no valid reason for the impoundment.
Right. The decision to impound the car and conduct an inventory search, those two decisions both need to be conducted pursuant to standardized police procedures. And that comes out of the U.S. Supreme Court case, Colorado v. Bertine. And I think a division of this court also discussed it in one of the cases I cited in my opening brief, I believe Litchfield. The decision to impound the car also has to be based on standardized police procedures. The officers have to actually be acting pursuant to those procedures. There have to be procedures in place. That's what Colorado v. Bertine addresses. And the officers also have to be acting pursuant to those procedures.
Saying the officer has to testify at a hearing that the reason I impounded this car was because after I found out that he didn't have a valid driver's license to drive, and I found out that he didn't have registration for this car, or questionable registration for this car, then I followed also followed the procedures, which was to impound the car. But in effect, that's what the officer did, or said, once I found out those two things, I decided to impound this car. And what was missing? That he didn't say I did it pursuant to department procedures?
We don't know what the department procedures were, and we don't know that he did it pursuant to those procedures. His decision to impound the car may have been, in fact, contrary to the procedures. The procedures, we don't know what they are, and that's really the problem here. The procedures.
You're saying this case that you cite, Bertine and Littlefield, I think you said.
Litchfield, I think it's called.
Say that those procedures have to be offered into evidence to support the decision to impound.
Yes,
okay.
They do. And that's precisely the point here, and that's precisely the issue. It's Litchfield. The officer here testified that he impounded the car, but it's quite possible that the procedure said, under the scenario in this case, when the car is not abandoned, when there is insurance for the vehicle, when there is someone at the vehicle who has a valid driver's license, as Mr. Irvin did, and could drive the car away, that the car should either be driven away by that person or parked and locked on the side road. And so we don't know that what Officer Ryan decided to do was actually valid pursuant to the standardized police procedures.
And those standardized police procedures deal primarily with the inventory search piece of the argument. How would your argument differ with an investigatory stop?
The investigatory stop is an entirely separate justification as an exception to the warrant requirement. And the initial investigatory stop, as I said, was valid in this case. To continue to seize Mr. Irvin beyond that initial justification for the stop, once the driver was taken out of the car, ticketed, and the decision was made to impound it, there would have to be some additional or other reasonable suspicion to allow a continued seizure of Mr. Irvin. And here the state didn't argue it at all below, so I think that issue is waived and this court should not address it.
Affirm on different grounds.
Generally, this court may affirm on different grounds, but there has to be support in the record for it. And I don't think that this record supports it. I also think that in People v. Syrie, the Colorado Supreme Court explicitly stated that when the state fails to meet its burden at a suppression hearing, the state has a full and fair opportunity to present evidence to support an exception to the warrant requirement as it has to do. If the state fails to present a justification, it has conceded that argument. And I think the Colorado Supreme Court in Syrie is very clear on that point. So I think that while in general this court may affirm, as long as there's support in the record, I don't think there's support in the record here. And I think for suppression issues where it's clearly the state's burden to present the exceptions to the warrant requirement and they fail to do so, I think they've conceded that argument.
Go back to the sequence of events for just a moment.
Sure.
As it relates to an investigatory stop.
Okay.
Once the officer had taken the driver out side of the vehicle, were they within the investigatory stop to ask the passenger to get out of the vehicle?
From my reading of the record, it appears that they were not. Officer Ryan testified at the suppression hearing, it's on pages 24 and 25, I believe, that he got the driver out of the car, patted him down, and issued him a ticket. And I think that had at that point decided to impound the car. And I think that decision to impound the car shows that the investigatory stop at that point was over. To the extent that the record may not be clear, this is another problem with addressing the investigatory stop argument for the first time on appeal. The state did not raise it below. They did not present evidence about this. They did not at all attempt to justify the warrantless seizure of Mr. Irvin based on an investigatory stop. So I think that really gets back to, the lack of evidence in the record to support it and the fact that the state conceded and waived that argument by failing to raise it below. Once Mr. Irvin, the seizure of Mr. Irvin, the continued ongoing seizure by taking him out of the car, was not justified, as I have said, by an exception to the warrant requirement, and the state failed to prove that. Once he was taken out of the car, the gun was essentially seen by the officer. And that seizure of that gun was a result, a direct result, of the unlawful and unconstitutional continued seizure of Mr. Ervin. And so the officers, the seizure of that gun was a direct result, and it was an exploitation of that unconstitutional seizure and a direct result of that illegality. And so therefore that item must be suppressed. And the statements that Mr. Ervin made were also a fruit of the unlawful seizure and subsequent search of the car. And so
when did he make the statement? Must be suppressed. I'm sorry. When did Mr. Ervin make the statement that he was a convicted felon?
It appears, again, the record is not 100% clear on this, but it appears from Officer Ryan's testimony that that Mr. Ervin made that statement when Officer Ryan first approached the car and got the driver's license.
Also asked Mr. Ervin for his identification.
Correct.
And he said, I'm a convicted felon.
Correct.
So they knew that before he even got out of the car.
It appears so.
Okay, so then when he gets out of the car, because they're going to impound it, and the other officer sees the gun, and then Mr. Ervin said, I forget how it goes, that's my gun, I think he said, or my cousin's gun or something.
Yeah, that's mine. It belongs to my cousin.
So he claimed possessory interest in the gun as soon as the officer spotted it. Did the officer even ask him a question about it, or did he just volunteer
it? It was a little bit later. Once the officer sees the gun, he handcuffs both the driver and the passenger and takes them away, and then, you know, gets the gun out of the car. And once everything is secure, the driver is brought over to Mr. Ervin, and that's when Mr. Ervin makes those statements.
The officer who found the gun know that Mr. Ervin had made the statement, I'm a convicted felon?
I believe so.
So if he puts two and two together, he says this could be a felon in possession of a weapon, right?
Right.
Which is what he was charged with.
Right. But that only gets us there if the officer is lawfully where he has a right to be. And here, there has to be an exception to the warrant requirement that allows the continued seizure of Mr. Ervin. Because that was unlawful, everything subsequent to that must be suppressed.
Is he seized when they asked him to get out of the car because we're impounding it?
Absolutely. The state does not argue that the encounter was consensual. And an officer coming up to the car saying, get out of the car, it's a police citizen encounter, and it's absolutely a seizure.
So can it be an extension of the investigatory stop?
To be an extension of the investigatory stop, it has to, the stop at that point, the legitimate reasons for the stop are over. To be an extension, there would have to be additional reasonable suspicion for the officer to continue the seizure of Mr. Ervin. And there was none based on the record here. And so because that continued seizure was unlawful, the seizure was illegal and the gun was a direct result of that and therefore must be suppressed as well as the statements. If the court has no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rebecca Jones. My registration number is 31044, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. I would like to begin just by stating the proposition that the people may defend the trial court's ruling on any ground supported by the record, whether or not the ground was relied on or even considered by the trial court. And the defendant's reliance on the Suri case is misplaced. In that case, the prosecution conceded an issue at the suppression hearing and then attempted to raise that same issue on appeal. In that case, the court found that the prosecution had waived their right to raise that claim. So whether we're talking about the defendant's standing challenges search or the investigatory stop as support for the seizure of the gun, this court is entitled to affirm the trial court's ruling on either of those bases. We have the Supreme Court case of Moody, which says that standing may be raised for the first time on appeal. And while the defendant relies on Stiegeld, I think the Moody court distinguishes Stiegeld by saying that, again, that's a case where the prosecution took a contrary position below. In that case, the prosecution had conceded in both the trial court and the Court of Appeals and in the brief in opposition to the cert petition that the defendant had standing, and then after cert was granted, tried to raise the issue of standing. So that's distinguishable from the situation we have presented here, where the prosecution is nearly silent on the issue of standing. That's much more in line with the Combs case, where the prosecution remained silent and the court found that that issue could be raised on appeal for the first time.
On the standing issue, didn't the defendant claim a proprietary interest in the gun by saying, well, that's mine, it belongs to my cousin?
Assuming that that would be enough to provide him with standing, no, I don't believe so. What the defendant actually stated, while he initially stated, yes, the gun is mine, if you read his statement in context and the entirety of the statement, what he says is, that gun belonged to my cousin. She was in the car, we gave her a ride home, she was drunk and left it underneath the seat. You know, that belongs to her. So while his initial statement was, yeah, it's mine, the context of the statement as a whole shows that he wasn't claiming any possessory or proprietary interest in this gun. He was saying it belonged to his cousin. That was his entire defense subsequently at trial, was this was not his gun. So not only did he not have a possessory or a proprietary interest in the car as merely a passenger, he didn't have any interest in the gun either. As a result, the defendant lacked standing to even challenge the search in this case in the first place. If the court has no further issues or questions on standing, I'd like to go ahead and address the investigatory stop. I think all the parties can agree that the initial stop of the car was valid. The driver of the car was speeding and failed to signal a turn when the officer stopped the car. Once the car was stopped, they found out that the driver didn't have a valid license and he couldn't produce registration for the car. So the ownership of the vehicle was certainly in question.
See this. Did the driver produce a proof of insurance card?
I believe there was testimony that a proof of insurance card was provided.
So the driver had a license, but it was under restraint.
Yes, Your Honor.
And he produced an insurance card.
Yes.
And then he could not produce a registration.
Correct.
However.
Correct. And it was clear that he was not the owner of the car and that the passenger in this case was also not the owner of the car.
That's when Officer Ryan decided to impound the car.
Yes, because the ownership of the vehicle was in question.
So why didn't the investigatory stop end at that point, according to...
Well, I don't think that it did. I mean, typically an investigatory stop ends when a citation is issued, the documents are returned, and the officer thanks the driver, and they proceed on their way in the vehicle. This case is a little bit different because under no circumstances, whether or not they impounded the car or decided to merely lock the car and leave it at the side of the road, under no circumstances were they going to allow the occupants of the car to leave the scene in the car. So whether or not this was a valid impoundment, I believe is what the defendant said, or whether they were merely going to lock the car and leave it, the defendant had to get out of the car. I mean, there was no way around that. Even if he was going to be free to proceed on his way, he had to get out of the car. And the gun...
So the defendant's exiting the car extended the investigatory stop for at least those few seconds, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Why did it end then when he got out of the car?
Why didn't it end?
Yeah. Did it end there?
At that point, I believe they were going to proceed to do a pat-down search of the defendant. So I believe that the investigatory stop was still ongoing at that point. They didn't say, get out of the car and proceed on your way. They did ask him to get out of the car, and then they did, I believe, it's a little unclear whether or not they saw the gun first and then did the pat-down search, or whether they started to do the pat-down search and as they began the pat-down search, observed the gun.
Certainly, if they saw the gun first, I would assume there'd be justification for the pat-down search, but what did the officer say? The testimony,
as I said, was a little bit unclear on that, about the timeline of when all of this happened. I believe he said that as he began the pat-down search, he observed the gun on the floor of the vehicle. So it sounds like everything was sort of happening simultaneously. But in either case...
My recollection was that testimony from Officer Monahan was that because the door was opened and...
And I think there was both testimony to that effect and some subsequent testimony saying that it was during the course or as he was about to begin, something along those lines. In either case, the gun was observed in plain view prior to any search of the vehicle. The gun was laying on the floor, protruding out from underneath the seat. The officer could see the gun as the defendant exited the car. They knew at that time that the defendant was a convicted felon. They saw the gun on the floor of the car. Again, just asking the defendant to somehow exit the vehicle, how this somehow transforms this investigatory stop into something more than it was, I'm not sure how this requires suppression of the gun in this case. The defendant had to exit the car in order for the police officers to secure the vehicle in whatever way they chose to do so. And in doing so, they viewed the gun on the floor of the car in plain view.
Under these circumstances, when Officer Monahan asked the defendant to step out of the car, was that a seizure?
Well, the defendant had already been seized. I mean, we have the Brennan case that says passengers are seized as part of a traffic stop. So he was seized at the time of the initial traffic stop, even though the focus of the traffic stop initially was on the driver, based on the driver's failure to signal and speeding, and then his subsequent failure to provide valid registration for the car. But I think it's clear under the case law that the defendant was seized at the time of the traffic stop.
So if he was seized at the time of the traffic stop, and we're looking at whether or not there was reason to extend the traffic stop to the point, or extend the seizure to the point where the defendant was patted down, it looks like it would be reasonable to ask him to get out of the car.
Absolutely.
If it's going to be towed away.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Or even if it's going to be abandoned.
Yes, whether they're going to lock it and leave it at the side of the road or impound the vehicle. Under both circumstances, they have to ask the defendant to exit the vehicle. They can't complete the investigatory stop with the defendant remaining inside the vehicle when they're not going to allow the defendant to drive off in the vehicle.
Can you speak to the inventory search argument that police procedures were not followed?
Well, and again, my argument, of course, is that we don't need to reach that because both the defendant did not have standing and that all of this was part of a valid investigatory stop in this case. And the gun wasn't even recovered as part of an inventory search of the vehicle. It was recovered because it was observed by the officers in plain view. However, the case law does require that a valid inventory search is conducted pursuant to routine administrative procedures in order for that to qualify as an exception to the warrant requirement. And I will agree that the testimony on this point at the suppression hearing was certainly lacking. There was some testimony from the officers that vehicles are generally parked and locked when the owner of the vehicle is arrested. In this case, of course, we don't have the owner of the vehicle being arrested. We have someone, and we don't really know what his connection is to the vehicle. And we do have testimony from the officer that he did contact dispatch, that the tow truck was contacted by dispatch, and he did, in fact, fill out the impound form. So there is some indication that he did follow certain policies and procedures. However, there was not a specific statement by the officer that the procedures require X, Y, and Z, and I did these things pursuant to those requirements.
What about the, I think I remember from the transcript that Officer Monahan testified that he seized the gun pursuant to an inventory search. Isn't that what he said?
He may have said that, Your Honor, but again, that's a legal determination, and he saw the gun in plain view. I'm not sure that that actually constitutes an inventory search at that point. While he may have subsequently been able to seize the gun pursuant to an inventory search had proper procedures been followed, once they observed the gun in plain view, the officers are entitled to seize the gun under the automobile exception. If the court has no further questions, I would ask that this court affirm the trial court's order denying the defendant's motion to suppress.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, I think part of the difficulty in this case and what some of the court's questions are getting at is the fact that the officers below, their sole justification for getting Mr. Irvin out of the car and conducting the search, which, you know, getting him out of the car and then seeing the gun there, was that it was based on the decision to impound and inventory the car. And so it's very hard to, after the fact, for the first time on appeal, have essentially a post hoc justification raising an entirely new exception to the warrant requirement. And that's why, really, I think the best outcome in this case, the best decision for this court, is to find that the state conceded or waived that issue below. As to the Syrie case, the state has said that the DA in that case conceded an issue at the suppression hearing and the court said they couldn't then raise it on appeal. However, I don't believe that that's a correct reading of the case. The state there argued several different grounds for the search of the couch. In that case, it was a warrantless, the consensual entry into an apartment, a warrantless search of the apartment. Defendant was seized. And after that seizure, they looked under the couch and found part of a gun or a gun. And the state there was trying to raise an entirely new justification for the first time on appeal. And the Colorado Supreme Court said they can't do that. They've conceded that argument. As to standing, the state, I think Judge Hawthorne, you were asking about the possessory interest. And in the Rackus case, the court says that arcane distinctions developed in property and tort law, in that case dealing with a search, ought not to control. Here, by Mr. Irvin claiming at least even temporary ownership over the gun, he does have standing an expectation of privacy in the item seized. And additionally, he certainly has standing in the seizure of his person, and there was that ongoing seizure. The investigatory stop did end, and the additional justification for getting Mr. Irvin out of the car in a valid impound and inventory case, where the decision to impound an inventory, conduct an inventory search of the car is based on standardized procedures. Sure, the police may be able to get the person out of the car, but here we don't know that that decision to impound was pursuant to any standardized procedures. I see I'm out of time. I would ask that this court suppress the evidence in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, we thank counsel for your arguments this morning. This matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.